You're in the home 6010.
Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. It is Monday, November 30th, and that's good news. You know why? That means we have just one day left before the final month of 2020, a year we are all ready to plow through ahead and put behind us. Field Yates, Stefania Bell, and Daniel Dopp hanging out with you on this Monday to recap a lot of Week 12. Normally what I say on Monday morning is we're recapping basically all of whatever week we're in. This week's a little bit different in a lot of ways because there feels like there are some hanging chads, if you will, for week 12.
Nice.
And Stefania, it would be appropriate right now to begin with a story that I need to start by telling you this. We are recording this, as we do every day, at 10 a.m. Eastern time. You could be listening to this podcast at 4 o'clock, 2 o'clock, heck, even noon, and there could be an update on this. So take our information with a timestamp, if you will. It's 10 a.m. The Ravens-Steelers game, which is originally scheduled for Thursday, got pushed to Sunday, has been pushed to Tuesday. What is the latest on whether that game will even be played?
Well, it's still on for Tuesday as of this moment.
Okay.
Timestamp it, as you say. Adam Schefter reporting this morning that practice was canceled for the Ravens today. And I think the last time they practiced was Saturday?
The Ravens?
Right.
I believe Saturday.
Saturday before.
Before the Titans, right.
Right.
Week 11 Saturday.
Before the Titans, yeah. Right. Because we've had this week in between with Thanksgiving when they were originally supposed to play. It doesn't totally surprise me the practice was canceled because the NFL shut down every facility for Monday and Tuesday. So why would they grant them an exception, especially in the midst of an outbreak? Doesn't surprise me. We also are hearing reports that, again, from Adam Schefter, that their travel plans are in flux because of potential snow in Pittsburgh. So there are a lot of moving parts, as you say. I think the Ravens knew all along that they were going to be going into this game without the ability to get together and practice. I don't think that's a surprise. The question has really been who would be available. Willie Snead was the last player to be added to the reserve COVID-19 list. That was yesterday. So as of this moment, we have not heard about additional tests. To me, the only thing that would disrupt it at this point is if there were additional positives for the Ravens or the Steelers.
Let me just offer my perspective, and you can disagree. You can also completely ignore this if you're out there, or you can take it to heart, is that what I would do is this. If you're listening to this close to real time, I would start to plant the seeds of how you're going to replace whatever Steelers and Ravens you might have in your lineup, whether it's Juju Smith-Schuster or perhaps Deontay Johnson, or also obviously Chase Claypool, or any of the Ravens that might still be available, Gus Edwards, for example. Make your plans now of how you might replace them. Earmark a player in Monday Night Football. This is, of course, assuming that your league did not already rectify this issue by allowing you to submit a player who was on your bench, but whose points you would receive if this game is not, in fact, played on Tuesday night. The tenor of this is just growing more and more uneasy for me as of right now on Monday morning. I'm not saying you have to execute the move if we haven't heard something definitive by like 4:45, 5 o'clock, 5:30, 6 p.m. Because I understand that if we've made it to basically within 24 hours of kickoff, it seems like there's a chance the game will be played on Tuesday. I'm just telling you that it's worth investigating what other options might be available to you. And I get it. There aren't many. Like a Jalen Reagor or maybe even a Travis Fulgham or a David Moore for the Seahawks tonight. But I'm just starting to get the feeling that this game is more and more on thin ice. So it's worth taking a look at your options if you didn't already replace your Steelers and Ravens yesterday. And Stefania, you mentioned that the NFL is shutting down facilities both today and tomorrow. This, of course, is for teams that aren't playing today or tomorrow. So that leads us to, I think, sort of a broader conversation that if this Steelers and Ravens game is canceled, people are, you know, the belief that I have right now is the NFL may sort of temporarily reschedule it for week 18. I don't know this for a fact. I'm just sort of using some logic here. If only one game gets canceled the rest of the way, and it's the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens, you kind of wonder whether the NFL would play that game in Week 18 unless they absolutely need to. Like the Ravens are one win away from making the playoffs.
Like a tiebreaker situation.
Right. So we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But I think that one person, one thing that Daniel highlighted, which is smart, is like, so what should you do in your fantasy league? Again, my advice here. I wouldn't start to introduce Week 18 as a potential extension of your championship until we have multiple games canceled. Like if there's six games that get canceled over the next month and they've got a lot of fantasy relevant players and all of a sudden like you're compromised in weeks 15, 16, 17, then maybe I would make a move to expand your playoffs to Week 18. Maybe. But for now, I would continue with your current schedule. And I think despite everything that's taken place over the past 8 days with the Ravens, which includes 21 new players placed on the COVID-19 list, Stefania, I think the NFL still feels like they're on track to, as long as people follow protocols, continue to play basically every game. Ravens Steelers possibly be an exception.
Yeah, and I think it's also worth reminding that they have put every club in the intensive protocol situation. Like everyone is under that. Before, it was just for clubs that had an outbreak, somebody who tested positive. But they found a few weeks back that the clubs that were in the intensive protocols had fewer, if not sometimes zero, high risk close contacts when they followed protocols. And if you look at the Denver game, that's an example of where there was a lapse in the protocol within the quarterback room. And ultimately, it cost them having any quarterback to start the game. And not because they tested positive, but because they were identified as high-risk close contacts to one of the quarterbacks who tested positive, and therefore they were all out. And Drew Lock, to his credit, posted an apology for what happened. Vic Fangio was not quite so... he wasn't as kind about it, I guess, if you will. He was very stern and said that the quarterbacks essentially put the team in the league in a bad position. I think if nothing else, what we can hope is that the events of this week will help every other team going forward ensure that they are really adherent and vigilant to the protocols. And hopefully, look, we're dealing with this as a country. They have said all along, the medical advisors to the NFL and the NFLPA, that as cases rise in the country, they are more likely to rise within the NFL community as well. They're not living in a bubble. But to date, the facilities have been pretty protected. But when somebody comes in and introduces the virus to the facility and people aren't protected, then you see the outbreaks like you do.
And by the way, like we got to be on attention this year in fantasy football. And I understand that fantasy football like doesn't register on the Richter scale relative to COVID-19, as it shouldn't, right? It's just a game that we play. But think about all the adjustments you had to make come Saturday morning. I mean, Jonathan Taylor, for example, added to the COVID-19 list for the Colts. The Denver Broncos quarterbacks and the impact, the fallout from that. Just be on attention. We're going to do our best to convey all the information that we have. But I would say that the goal for the entire NFL community is to like make it to the end of the regular season. And by the way, make it through the end of the postseason, obviously, as well. But every week that passes by is a good week for the NFL. Right. We can get as many games played as possible.
Just with this Tuesday night game, one more thing. It's not just the Ravens. James Conner will be absent from this game for COVID-19 related reasons as well.
Let's get into the injuries from Sunday. And we start, Stefania, with Teddy Bridgewater. And this is the second time that the Panthers have had a star offensive player, one of their key offensive players, I should say, on the final drive get injured in a way that's like, okay, like the Christian McCaffrey injury, right? Like didn't quite register because it was so late in the game and they were attempting to beat the Chiefs in an upset fashion. Obviously, it's cost him multiple games since. Teddy Bridgewater gets banged up late in the game. Do we have any information on what happened and what the outlook might be?
This was really strange because he came into this game, remember, after missing a game because of a mild MCL sprain. And I was actually watching how he moved. He looked good. He ran the ball a couple times. I thought, the knee's really not giving him any trouble. And then this last play of the game, the last drive of the game, he ends up going down. It looked like he was limping off the field. But in the presser afterward, he said, my arm is good. I got sideswiped or something in my arm. And so he seemed to intimate that it was his arm that was the issue, but then he dismissed it. So I don't think it's serious. They do have a bye next week, so good for them.
Yeah. So it sounds like maybe we'll have Teddy Bridgewater come week 14. Got to keep track of my weeks here now. The good news is P.J. Walker acquitted himself nicely last week when he did have to step in for Teddy Bridgewater, and the offense, for fantasy purposes, which was not much less worse for the wear. Daniel Jones, again, not a huge fantasy star this year, Stefania, but his injury last night, or yesterday, I should say, has it on the radar. I mean, what happened to him, and why did he leave that game against the Bengals?
He had a hamstring injury in the third quarter. It was the end of a 7-yard run. He stayed in for a couple plays, and then he clearly was grabbing his hamstring. Went off the field, was evaluated, tried to come back in, was interesting, threw a pass, and then he took himself out. He was like, he said later that he knew that he could not throw the ball effectively and he couldn't move around effectively. There was no way that he could stay in the game. At first, it sounded like they didn't think the injury was particularly serious. But later, Jordan Renan, who covers the team for us, had cited a source saying it was, quote, pretty bad, and that there were more tests scheduled for Monday. As we know, significant hamstring injuries are multi-week injuries. And even though he's not a running back or receiver, his own words about how he was impacted yesterday by the injury tell you why, even as a quarterback, and he does, you know, run the ball. I mean, he's fairly mobile as a quarterback, even if he's not a Lamar Jackson type. Without that hamstring, it's going to affect his mobility and his ability to throw. So stay tuned for more developments as far as the test results when they come back. But I would plan on him missing some time.
And obviously the next man up is Colt McCoy for that Giants offense. Let's say this for Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, guys like that. First of all, this happened late in the game, late-ish in the game, so we don't have a totally clear picture of what this offense looks like. But also, Daniel Jones has struggled a lot this year. He's better than Colt McCoy, make no mistake about that, but I don't know that it's a massive, massive downgrade in the way that not having, for example, Joe Burrow basically nuked the Cincinnati Bengals passing offense with Brandon Allen taking over as the starter yesterday.
They travel to Seattle next week.
Oh, interesting one. Well, I think, though, that Seattle defense maybe is coming around a little bit. We'll find out tonight just how ready it is for prime time. Josh Jacobs yesterday, Stefania, gets banged up, and this one also late in the game for the Raiders.
Yeah, you know, he came into this game on the injury report. He's been on the injury report frequently, this one because of his hip, but he left because of an ankle injury. He had a low tackle, was kind of a sweeping tackle around the leg, and as he was trying to pull away, the defender was still holding onto his ankle. John Gruden afterwards acknowledged being a little bit concerned. Now, there was a lot going on in that play. Josh Jacobs fumbled at the time while he was being tackled. It's not clear how serious this injury is, but when John Gruden acknowledges up front that there's some concern, it makes me pay attention.
Yeah, Devontae Booker has actually run really well for the Raiders this year. If you look closely at how often he has gotten some reps for them, I got to be honest with you. I lost track of this injury when I was writing the waiver wire column this morning. It has not yet been submitted, but Devontae Booker will be prominently featured, if not the top ad of the week. One more here, Stefania. Philip Lindsay, who actually opened the game as the Broncos' first quarterback. Not really. He did take a direct snap to begin the game and then left the game.
Yeah, he, according to Vic Fangio, tweaked his knee. That's about as much as we got. But the fact that he left the game, he did stay on the sideline. You know, sometimes if it's a really serious injury, they're not coming back out. So you can take a little bit from that, but really not much detail yet. Enough for him to not be able to finish the game. I would stay tuned. By the way, Josh Jacobs and the Raiders, if Josh Jacobs plays, they face the Jets next week. So if Devontae Booker's coming in, could be a really good pickup for the week.
Wow, okay, good note there. And by the way, just to reiterate, on the Broncos quarterback, Stefania, because their offense obviously was impacted dramatically by what happened yesterday. They completed one total pass. It was to Noah Fant for 13 yards. Assuming none of them test positive for COVID-19, we could very well have not only Drew Locke, but the remainder of the quarterback room besides Jeff Driskel available.
Right. Everyone week. Besides Jeff Driskel, assuming they test negative throughout the next week.
Yep. So it'll be a 1-week issue, but still a reminder to be vigilant in following the protocols for all players, not just Broncos quarterbacks, but all those around the NFL. Got a ton of information coming up, including a return that was just so lovely to see. But first, a couple of words from friends.
After a long summer, the wait is officially over. College football is back, and so is an all-new season of your favorite Dr. Pepper-obsessed college football town. That's right, we're talking about Fansville, everybody. So brace yourself for an all-on-the-field football drama and off-the-field Dr. Pepper flavor your eyes and taste buds can handle. Because even though you can't be at the stadium, you can still dress, cheer, and drink Dr. Pepper like a true fan. Head to a store near you to treat your inner college football fan to an ice-cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today.
The rising generation of NFL superstars have been dropping dimes and creating in space for years, way before they got to the league. Now it's your turn. Create your own highlight reel with X-Factor abilities and innovative new skill stick controls. Swag out and win in style in new backyard football-inspired mode, The Yard. Celebrate your style, showcase your creativity, and rise to fame in a way that only you can. Go all out in Madden NFL 21. Available now.
Field, I got to jump in here real quick.
Okay.
Because I just don't understand why NFL players, and I get that they're paid handsomely, why are they running around with change in their pocket when they're on the field?
Ooh.
You know what I'm saying?
That's a really, really good.
Because if they're dropping dimes everywhere, you would think really that maybe just like don't put that money in your uniform before you go out there.
But maybe, you know, like does that... Like if you're like a really light wide receiver, does it make you a little bit
a little bit more
makes you like got a little more powerful in the open field?
Is that how Hollywood Brown gained that extra weight this offseason?
That could be it. Well, it hasn't really worked out for him. This might be
the cheesiest you guys have.
Okay, Stefania, you know what? Fine, you're right.
My freshman year, the captain of our lacrosse team, one of them at Wesleyan, wore ankle weights at all times to work out.
No way.
And I thought it was like the only way you should train now going forward. Like
Stop
the captain,
it.
No. You got to do it. So ankle weights were an investment of the PBH freshman year budget.
Like, don't tell me you were wearing a weighted vest.
Just ankle weights. Okay. Ankle weights.
Only ankle weights.
Yeah. No little pink wrist weights. Ankle weights.
So yesterday morning, we learned that Austin Eckler would return. There also was some reporting that Austin Eckler, he's going to return, but he may not necessarily be the workhorse in the Chargers' backfield.
Oh.
Now, oddly enough, I define 16 targets plus playing 80% of the snaps plus having 23.9 fantasy points as a workhorse. Mm. But if that means there's better days ahead for Austin Eckler, you are all in good luck. Stefania, he had a career-high 25 touches. Career-high 25.
So here's the thing. Just in defense of people who might have thought that, it is... We said this on the Fantasy Football Now a couple of times. It is often an evolution when you bring a player back from an injury as serious as the one he had. Remember, he's been out 8 weeks. For him to come back, and they need to know that he's doing okay with the work. If at any point he had struggled or had a setback, they might have just pulled him out to be cautious. So it's fair to say you just don't know what the workload is going to be. If you were watching that game, you could tell pretty quickly that Austin Eckler had worked like a champ to come back. And it was everything to me to the eye test. It was the quickness. It was the explosiveness. But you know what else there is? I don't think people really think about something you cannot simulate. I mean, yeah, you can throw weights on your back like he did and have these, you know, be able to squat 400 pounds. But when you're dragging defenders, people are trying to tackle you, the way you engage your hamstring to draw, you know, to pull your body forward, to propel it forward while people are trying to pull you down is about the most load you can put on it. He did fine with that. He looked great.
I think the lesson learned here is this, and I really don't think that many people did sit Austin Eckler yesterday if they had Austin Eckler on their roster. But I think when you're evaluating these pregame reports about usage and workload and things like that, there are two categories. Okay. One is something that's like either non-committal, sort of gray area, kind of murky. And in those cases, you start the player. The only way that you sit a star player using pregame workload stuff like that as like a tiebreaker is if you hear specifically, hey, I'm just making this up here. Christian McCaffrey returns in week 14. The Panthers will not play him more than 12 snaps. Right, like we see this oftentimes in the NBA. Like we see minutes restrictions, right? When Zion Williamson debuted in the NBA, he was on a minutes restriction. And I don't care if they were up by two with a minute to go. If he had reached his minutes restriction, he was out of the game. Anyways, I digress. More importantly, it's awesome to see Austin Eckler back. He was the clear-cut guy for the Chargers. He got excellent passing game usage. He and Keenan Allen and Justin Herbert are stars. Like they have three legitimate super rock stars on offense and fantasy football. It was awesome to see. Yeah. Welcome back, Austin Eckler.
There's one more test. How he feels today. That's always the final test. He got through that game and there's no setback at all. Then I think you can just be clear-eyed going forward with him.
So we were really clamoring to see Austin Ekeler back. And as I said this actually yesterday on Fantasy Football Now, it's amazing how when David Montgomery is healthy and in your lineup, you're like, oh, God, I have to start David Montgomery again. And then when he's out of your lineup, you're like, I would love to have David Montgomery back in my lineup.
He looked good last night.
He did look good.
He looked good right out of the gate. He had a couple nice big runs, but I thought he looked as good as he's looked all season.
He did.
You weren't
no
expecting
doubt.
That.
Longest run of his career, 57 yards early in the game. He had five catches for 40 yards. David Montgomery's been enough involved in the passing game to kind of keep his floor where it needed to be on that flex radar. He's a workhorse. He's not super, super talented, but he's talented enough with enough volume that, again, as we sit here down the stretch, and I'm looking at the waiver wire column and debating Frank Gore and Devontae Booker as the top players to add this week, then, yeah, there's some value here in David Montgomery. He is what you need him to be generally. Raheem Mostert, it was great to see him back on the field yesterday, and I have immense respect for Raheem Mostert as a player. I learned more about him as a man yesterday after the game. For those that maybe saw his really impressive candor, he was very emotional. Raheem Mostert has his family back in Cleveland, which is a home for them, and he's been away from them for many, many months.
And has a brand new baby, I believe.
It's not easy under any circumstances, especially, and I get it. These guys are well paid, and they make plenty of money, yada, yada, yada. It doesn't necessarily mean that being away from your family is easy. But he returned yesterday. That was good to see Stefania. And good enough. Good enough. He played 28 snaps to Jeff Wilson.
And found the end zone.
Yeah, found the end zone and looked, in a huge win for your 49ers, looked to me a pretty reasonable facsimile of what he has been prior to the injury.
Yeah, I thought he looked pretty good. You know, unfortunately, he had a fumble as well. But for the most part, he looked good. And I think you saw from the 49ers offense sort of what you can expect from the 49ers offense with Nick Mullins under center. And look, the two big playmakers that they wanted back were Raheem Mostert and Deebo Samuel, and they got them, and it changed the way they were able to execute the offense.
So I understand his yards per carry were low yesterday, and that's fine. I guess my sort of feelings was that, like, if he can just make it through the game healthy, then like that's a good starting point, and
right
get
now.
Some of the goal line work, which he did, of course, in scoring that touchdown that Stefania mentioned. Jeff Wilson played a good amount, but I think the 49ers probably are a little bit mindful of this, Stefania, is that even if Raheem Mostert is their best runner, and that to me is not a debate, right? Like, they're probably still going to, for the rest of the season, be judicious in how they utilize some of these players a little bit. Like, because, like, as much as you may want to have Raheem Mostert play every single snap, Kyle Shanahan may be like, okay, he's missed multiple games on two separate occasions, I believe, this season. Like, maybe this isn't the year for us to only rely on him, especially because the winning formula yesterday was this grab bag of running backs. But good to see him back. I still think he's sort of a lowish end RB2 or a flex based off of his talent and the offense he plays in, which also includes just a super duper star at wide receiver, Deebo Samuel. He is so fun to watch. How about his last three games? This is absurd. 22 catches on 24 targets, 265 yards, and a touchdown. He had 11 catches for 134 yards yesterday. And I didn't ask Kyle for this before the show, and I probably should have. The last time they played the Rams, he had 6 catches for, I think, 61 yards, and every catch was at or behind the line of scrimmage. Yesterday,
first one was...
Yeah, I mean, yesterday there was a lot, you know, there was a lot of stuff at or near the line of scrimmage. He's so good after the catch.
He's so good after the catch. He just makes people miss, and he's fast. He can get to the outside and scoot up the sideline. And, you know, it's not like the Rams don't know what's coming. And they still had trouble with him. So, look, Deebo Samuel back, that was huge. I had mentioned before, he really was on an injured reserve type program twice because he started the season there. So even though they couldn't place him on there, they knew they were going to be absent him several weeks with this injury. Now they finally get him back. And I think, to your point, they have to manage their players carefully. And, you know, they have a lot of questions, including where they're going to be practicing and playing the next few weeks because of restrictions in Santa Clara County. But I think Kyle Shanahan knows how delicate this balance is of keeping these guys healthy.
So, by the way, Kyle notes 7 of his 11 catches yesterday at or behind the line of scrimmage, but that's how they're going to utilize him. He's an extension of the running game. He was awesome. Sammy Watkins returned yesterday for the Chiefs, 4 catches, 38 yards on 7 targets. He was a footnote in this game. I mean, that's not a Sammy Watkins indictment. It's just that there was some other crazy stuff that happened we'll discuss a little bit later. Now, let's get to some of the players that are concerning for us. And
yeah, let's start with that.
Let's start with the Saints. And I got to make sure I'm turning away so I can kind of calibrate my brain here for a second. Saints fans, bear with me for one moment, because what I'm going to say is going to sound negative, but it really isn't.
I've had many of these conversations. You're about to get dumped, Saints fans. I hate to
tell you. No. I love Saints fans. I ride with Saints fans. This has been well established
on
the podcast.
It's not me. It's you, Field.
Alvin Kamara's fantasy value has nosedived with Taysom Hill as the quarterback.
You're and telling me.
I think there's a chance that it kind of stays that way until Drew Brees returns. That does not mean that Alvin Kamara is not one of, if not the best running backs in football. It does not mean that the Saints are not one of, if not the best team in the NFC. All of those things can be true at the same time. You just look at how things have unfolded with Taysom Hill as the starting quarterback for the New Orleans Saints. Over the past two games, Alvin Kamara has one catch. One.
That's so bad.
And he had, one target the week before and two targets this week.
I'm well aware because I have him in the War Room League.
Yes.
And I lost because of, Alvin Kamara, normally, anybody who has him on their fantasy team knows what he normally does, 6.2 fantasy points. Taysom Hill gets two rushing touchdowns. And I was like, could you not just have, shared that a little bit, but even more so, just as you mentioned, it's the receptions, right. And often it'll be Kamara running it in after a little pitch and catch, right. 20 yards out.
59.5% of Alvin Kamara's fantasy points have come as a receiver this year. He's a running back, but at the same time, like, it's worth noting that, like, he is the best pass catching running back along with Christian McCaffrey in the NFL. Moreover, Stefania just mentioned Taysom Hill. He is to Alvin Kamara what Cam Newton is to Damian Harris, right? Like, if you're Sean Payton and you've got a goal line opportunity, 5, 3, 4 yards are in, who knows? Taysom Hill might be your best option. He had two more rushing touchdowns yesterday, 44 rushing yards. So, Alvin Kamara, you're going to have to start him every week. You're going to have to going forward. I can't imagine not starting Alvin Kamara. It's as much as the last 2 weeks would tell you, like, you don't need to start him. Just like, I have zero concerns for the Saints as a real football team. For those that have Alvin Kamara on their fantasy team, I understand your level of concern strictly for fantasy football. A reminder, these two things do relate in a lot of ways, but in some ways they do not relate at all. So I'm a little nervous, Tate. That's fair.
It's totally fair.
About that take.
I had somebody ask me if it was his foot, because you remember he's been on the injury report intermittently because of his foot, which it's been, you talk about like load management situations in the NBA. I think they're doing a little bit of that style of thing with Alvin Kamara. This is just utilization for him from their scheme perspective. And it does it. You know what I was thinking is now Alvin Kamara, who got you as far as he did, may keep you from getting into the fantasy playoffs. Should you happen to make it there and Drew Brees gets back, then he might help you to the championship. But in this window where you have to win every game, this is a problem.
So here's my question. You're still starting him every week, right? Yeah. I mean, he's going to be ranked in a there's no way he's going to be outside of flex consideration at worst.
Right.
So you're still starting him every week. Is he the only Saints skill position player that you're worried like this because of Taysom Hill under center? Or do you think that Michael Thomas, with the same thing, has those same concerns? Or are you still rolling him out there every week?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. As you bring us right to Michael Thomas, who had 4 catches for 50 yards on 6 targets in this game. He's the only Saint with multiple receptions yesterday. Yeah, I mean, Michael Thomas' season has just been a roller coaster, obviously. Not even really a roller coaster. It has not been efficient. Yeah, Daniel. That's where I'm at. I am going to start Alvin Kamara. I'm going to start Michael Thomas. As I have said many times on this show, this is the fantasy conundrum that doesn't really get us anywhere, is that you've got players that you are basically pot committed to starting, even though you aren't expecting much or aren't expecting what you hoped for out of them, right? Like, I don't know, Daniel, like, can you envision a scenario? Like, I'm sure there are definitely circumstances in which you would be capable of sitting Michael Thomas.
Sure.
Let's say you added, just off of waivers, you got Chase Claypool, and somebody else who's been dynamic this year that we weren't necessarily counting on being dynamic.
Like, Stephon Diggs panned out as a mid-round draft pick.
Right.
For you.
Stephon Diggs has been great. You got Chase Claypool, and you've got one other star wide receiver. Totally viable. That's like, you could say, all right, you know what? Stephon Diggs, Chase Claypool, and Adam Thielen over Michael Thomas. But absent circumstances like that, I'm going to have to keep going with him because he did have a great week the week before with Taysom Hill. A great week just last week with Taysom Hill. I want to mention one other Saints player, which is kind of interesting, and I'm digging deep here for waiver claims this week. Latavius Murray, who he's going to, not that I was advocating starting him yesterday. I'm not trying to tell you like, oh, told you so. But he had 25.5 fantasy points with two rushing touchdowns and 123 rushing yards. Just if you're going through the waiver wire right now and you're looking to pad your depth just a little bit, two things. First of all, he has seen quite a bit of a workload this year. I mean, like the guy has had like several double-digit rushing games in terms of touches or rushing attempts this year. He's a great insurance policy. I would just sort of file him away as one of those names that really should be added if you are looking to just stash someone on your bench, and especially if you have Alvin Kamara on your roster already. Let's get to some other players. Sort of disappointing, Stefania. Ezekiel Elliott, the year continues. 32 rushing yards, one catch, three
and a
targets,
fumble
seven
again.
Yards and a fumble. No, I is the health thing still? Like, is he even on the injury report still?
He said his hamstring's been feeling a lot better. I mean, he was directly asked about that. He said that's kind of in the rearview mirror. And he actually, to the eye test, is when he's run a little bit better. But I just think it's their offense.
I think that, totally. And this isn't that hard. Like, okay, so Dak Prescott's healthy. The offensive line is healthy to begin the season. Like, if you want to focus all your attention and energy on Ezekiel Elliott, fine. We'll throw it to CeeDee Lamb and also Amari Cooper and also Michael Gallup and at the time also Blake Jarwin. Like, those are four capable players. But now you don't have the option to pick your poison, or you don't need to pick your poison on defense. All you got to do is stop Ezekiel Elliott and get pressure on Andy Dalton, which you can do because two more offensive linemen went out, including Zach Martin, their best player, period, on the roster, other than Dak Prescott. And so, like, yeah, like this, it's gonna be tough sledding for Zeke the rest of the way. Like, and it's not about matchups anymore, right? Because like, no defense is overmatched decidedly by that Cowboys offensive line. It just isn't. Like, the Cowboys offensive line is that banged up right now. So it's going to be tough sledding for Zeke the rest of the way.
2 weeks ago, Zeke talked about the offensive line. Like, he gave them all the credit in the world when he started to look like himself. So clearly, with them being compromised, it compromises him. And that's not going to get better.
Yeah. One of the more confusing players, and I don't mean confusing like in terms of what his ability is, but one of the players that just in fantasy football has like been kind of a yo-yo for me is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. 37 rushing yards, one catch, one target, 2 yards yesterday. So 4.9 fantasy points in a win over the Buccaneers. And like, here's the thing. I have no leg to stand on to ever question what the Chiefs are doing on offense, right? Like, I can't sit here and say like, come on, Andy, like you got to get him the football more. No, because yesterday instead they had 203 passing yards to Tyreek Hill in the first quarter and they embarrassed the Buccaneers before a late charge from Tampa. So Clyde Edwards-Helaire, we probably sort of hoped to make it happen a little bit more coming into the season. But the reality for the Chiefs, where I think part of the Clyde Edwards-Helaire equation did not work out this year, is that even if Clyde Edwards-Helaire doesn't dominate as a runner, he's got an excellent chance to fall into the end zone 10 or 12 times. Here's where things happen. Here's where something happened that I think changed that. I don't know if everybody watched, I'm sure many of you watched the game yesterday. Think about all the things we've seen the Chiefs do at or near the goal line this season. I am 100% convinced that every week, Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, and Eric Bieniemy meet for 30 minutes to discuss 2 to 3 new plays they want to run at the goal line. Because yesterday, the Chiefs ran a play in which Travis Kelce threw a football to Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
And I got so much love for my guy, Travis Kelce. Wasn't the best throw I've ever seen.
Wasn't
the best I've ever seen, Travis.
Bad.
Like, I'm glad you're really good at your day job. But the bottom line is that, like, if, like,
they're
the idea.
They're having fun.
Well, and it's working too, right? Right?
Now, well,
they kicked a field goal on that drive. But still, like, the goal line rushing opportunities may not be there for Clyde Edwards-Helaire enough. Like,
I have another theory too, which is that, you know, in Kansas City, I don't. Andy Reid doesn't love one running back getting all the work, and especially a young rookie. And because I'm going to drop
Darrell Williams.
Because he opted out.
Damian Williams
opted out for the season. Clyde Edwards-Helaire suddenly was the focus of their run game.
Yeah.
And early on, I think it was the first or second game where Andy Reid talked about being concerned about putting too much work on him. And then when they went and got Le'Veon Bell, Andy Reid said that he hoped it would help shift some work away from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And yet, in the times where we saw him carry the load, we also saw him get better as he went on. So there's probably a balance between finding a rhythm and doing a little more as a young running back in that offense, and them also wanting to limit his touches as they're looking at a long season. So I feel like we're experiencing the fluctuations of that to some degree.
Yeah, it just hasn't been what maybe those who took him in the first round would want, right, Daniel?
Absolutely. Since Le'Veon Bell has been there, he's running back 20 on a per game basis, averaging an 11.5 fantasy points a game, which is just right now middle of the pack. But it feels like since that first game, you remember that very first game the Chiefs had, he had like 5 rushes inside the 5-yard line. And ever since that moment, it's like, all right, well, I guess we're going to stop running now. Like, we're only going to throw inside the 5, which is just crazy. So
crazy.
But I'll tell you what, I know this has nothing to do with next week. I think that when you look at a rookie who's been thrust into a position without a regular offseason, not only does this kid have a chance to get better for the second half of the season as the game continues to slow down and just become more comfortable, I think next year, because of how poor this first year went based on expectations, he's going to be a lot better than what it is that we're seeing this year.
Well, as we saw from someone like Kyler Murray, you can certainly improve from year 1 to year 2. I will say this, though. Yesterday, Kyler Murray looked substandard relative to what he is, the bar he has set for himself. So a couple of thoughts here is that, one, the Patriots are not equipped defensively to be dominant every week, but they still are really good at dialing up innovative game plans. And yesterday was just really, really well done by them. I thought that their game plan, speaking generally, was strong against Kyler Murray. But he also, Stefania, feels to me at least, and I could be wrong here, and I don't want to make excuses. I'm not trying to discredit the Patriots, and I'm not trying to make excuses for Kyler Murray. But is it hard? It's hard for me to not think that for a guy of Kyler Murray's caliber to not have a single completion of 20-plus yards yesterday,
yeah,
there must be something. I mean, the shoulder issue, it's something. It's something.
Right, and he's going to dismiss it, which he did. But there was one point where he got taken to the ground, and I swear he reached up and reached down really quickly, but he reached up to his shoulder, and I was looking at it, you know, kind of rewinding it to see how he fell. One thing about this kid, he's such a good athlete. You know, we talk about the way they get taken down. And I said that with this type of injury, the last thing you want is to go down your shoulder. If you watch, every time he got taken down, he made sure he fell on the back of his shoulder. Like, he was not going down on the point of it. Number one, that's super impressive. Number two, it still means you're thinking about it to some degree.
Yeah.
So I do think it's there a little bit. He would never make an excuse for it, but there's a reason that this was his worst game.
He's going to keep playing. I can't imagine he won't. But, you know, maybe that shoulder has something going on. The Patriots also defended him really well as a runner yesterday. I'm just telling you, like, the shoulder's a thing, but credit where it's due. Not that the Patriots ever care about getting credit because they just keep forging ahead, but if they ever wanted someone to drop a feather in their cap, here we are, dropping a feather in your cap, because that was an impressive game plan against Kyler yesterday. DeAndre Hopkins is in a rut, man. It's a baby rut. He's been held under 11 fantasy points in 3 of his past 4 games since the Cardinals' bye. His only touchdown catch was that of the Hail Mary. I refuse to believe, though, that this is going to be a problem for DeAndre Hopkins going forward. Like,
no.
He's DeAndre Hopkins. Let's get to the Bucs. What do you got, Dave?
I just really quickly want to give you an update. You and Matthew had a bet. Rest of season points per game, Chase Edmonds and Kenyon Drake. Right now, Drake, 16.7 points per game. Edmonds, 11.4. This big game from Drake last week really helped a lot.
And a couple things. You know, Kenyon Drake, still their goal line guy, right?
Yep.
He got stuffed yesterday at the goal line on a play that, you know, that would change the tenor even more. And then he's getting a little bit more involvement in the passing game. It'll be close, but I still obviously feel like Kenyon Drake is the better start there amongst the Cardinals running backs. Just really quick, on the Bucs, Tom Brady sort of bounced back. I think that the conversation about Tom Brady's merits, that's a lot more of like a real conversation, right? That's got to be like, that's one of those that you can like, go watch NFL Live and Dan Orlovsky and many times Marcus Spears and Laura Rutledge about whether or not there's a problem with the offense in Tampa Bay, because that's a conversation that obviously for those that watch the game, they heard Tony Romo talking about on the broadcast yesterday. Fantasy-wise, he gets you nearly 22 fantasy points. Their upcoming schedule includes a bye, and then they go Minnesota, Atlanta, Detroit, Atlanta. Pretty darn good way for Tom Brady to finish up this season. I'm not worried about Tom Brady at all, but I am worried about Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
Because this is so bizarre. Oh, it's not bizarre.
I thought this was going to be a big week, actually.
Two catches, 11 yards for Antonio Brown. So he's yet to crack 14 fantasy points in a game. He's yet to crack 70 receiving yards in a game. And maybe I'm wrong here. It could be this probably is a sample size issue more than anything else. But Antonio Brown is obviously at his best, as a lot of players would be, as a number one wide receiver. Undisputed number one wide receiver, maybe with one solid running mate, a la Juju Smith-Schuster a couple of seasons ago, right? But as the number three guy, it's just hard. There's a lot of mouths to feed here. There are just so many mouths to feed that maybe Antonio Brown just won't have stretches of dominance that I thought maybe were in store because he's Antonio Brown.
That was the conversation before he came in. Yeah. I mean, that was the worry, was that we've already got Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and a few others who don't stand out quite so much, like the Scotty Millers. But Antonio Brown, you just thought this connection with Brady, he's living with him, he brought him in. You don't do all that to not make him a focus when you're in the game. I thought that yesterday we were going to, was it yesterday? God, it feels like it's been a
week. Might have been 7 days ago, but who knows?
But I thought yesterday we were going to see that from Antonio Brown. And I thought you saw bigger playmaking moments from Chris Godwin.
Yeah, you did. The Bucs have the season is far from over for the Buccaneers, but I'll be really interested to see what happens this offseason, because these three players are all free agents for Tampa Bay. Antonio Brown, Chris Godwin, Rob Gronkowski, Cameron Brate as well. Maybe Brate has one more year beyond this, but like a lot of guys who are in sort of contract years that are on the offense now, and maybe things will like streamline a little bit more next season. Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but yeah, Antonio Brown, obviously, you can't use him in week 13, and that might make your lineup decisions a little bit easier with the Bucs on a bye next week. Darren Waller, man, 4 catches, 23 yards yesterday, under 40 yards in four of his past five games.
They were terrible yesterday, though, as a team. They were terrible.
That team took the Chiefs to the limit 7 days ago.
They were like out of sync. Whatever it was, John Gruden started his post-game presser with apologizing to Raider Nation. Like, it was just a bad game. I almost don't want to read too much into it because we've talked about how locked in Derek Carr looks. We've talked about how the offense seemed to be in sync. And yesterday was just off across the board.
You know what I think about? Sorry, Daniel, but I'll write to you after this. What I think about when teams do that is that I think if the Falcons and Raiders played 100 times, the Raiders probably win like 65, 70% of those games. I think about like the Chiefs and how consistently dominant they are right now, right? That like they don't have bad Sundays, or the Steelers at 10-0. Like, that's what I think about when I see how these teams go from playing so competitive a week ago to flatlining yesterday in Atlanta. Daniel, what did you have?
I watched Henry Ruggs drop what seemed like would have been a touchdown pass and just like an easy drag route over the middle. And obviously Derek Carr had a brutal day from a fantasy point perspective. And maybe this is less for fantasy, but can you tell me, can you just make me feel like Henry Ruggs isn't just going to be John Ross 2.0?
He's not. You know why? Because what he does when he does it well is absurd. He is a flash player. He is a player that like once or twice a week does something that you're like, oh yeah, that's why he, in an historic rookie class, was the first one taken. He's a rookie. He's 22 years old or whatever it is, 21 years old. Like, he'll come around. You're right. I am not willing to concede that he's John Ross 2.0 yet.
And that's fair.
No. Maybe I'm just talking myself into him being really good.
The comparison's just so close investment. And so easy.
Yeah, if you saw him in college, the talent that he has is pretty unique. I agree with you. Flash player, plays big. Like, he's a playmaker. But I also think, number one, he was pretty hurt at the beginning of the year. There's something that didn't get enough credit for. I think the significance of the injury played through a little bit. But also, he has been not a focal target of late. And I think when you're used to in college being a focal target all the time, and then you're sort of fluctuating up and down in an offense that's taken a while to click, I think you're going to make mistakes like that. You're going to have drops, you know?
Remember, he had the thing during the offseason too, when he was like moving a truck for somebody and like got like a gash in his thigh or something. That was like 7 months ago. Might as well have been like, you know, 20 years ago. Yeah.
Don't do these things.
Last one here, Michael Pittman, 2 catches for 28 yards. I remain bullish on this one, though. I really do. 9 targets yesterday for Michael Pittman Jr. So I think there is a chance that better days are at. I know the waiver wire column, I talk about it all the time on Mondays and Tuesdays, but like I remain ardent in my stance that he should be added in a bunch of leagues because, again, some of it is who's available right now. There are so few players that are available. Plus, 9 targets. Like, 9 targets is what you want for a player with his ability.
I was just bummed because I played him yesterday. So,
you also played against him when you played me in the Dynasty League.
True.
Cut you a break. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Time now for some players that we think might be, hopefully, maybe, possibly be matchup proof or not. How about Will Fuller?
Yes.
On Thanksgiving. Yes. That's a yes?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a yes.
To borrow a line from Stefania's book, yes.
Fuller last Thursday, so 4 or 5 days ago, whatever that is, had 6 catches, 171 yards, 2 touchdowns, good for 35.1 fantasy points. It'll be his 5th top 15 finish of the season, Stefania.
Yeah, and his quarterback's playing out of his mind right now.
He is absurd. So,
Deshaun Watson and Will Fuller have a thing going on. Maybe it's his DeAndre Hopkins replacement. Like, they're getting the energy together, him and Will Fuller. So I look at their next 3 games versus Indy, at Chicago, at Indy.
Yeah, I think they're going to be one of those teams that maybe plays a spoiler for some other teams down the stretch here because of the way that Deshaun Watson is playing. And Watson said after the trade deadline, like if the Texans had traded Will Fuller, it would have been hell. He would have been very upset about it. I wonder if that means he'll eventually return and stay with the Texans. He's a free agent after this season. In the meantime, though, like just not Austin Eckler level here, but think about the circumstances in which you would bench Will Fuller, right? And that's what I think you have to ask yourself going forward, is that we're in the playoffs, right? You don't win the playoffs by a bunch of players hitting like 7 to 10 points. Right, you win the playoffs because you have a couple of players that go absolutely nuts. I'm not talking Tyreek Hill 57.1 points or 56.1. I'm talking about a guy like Will Fuller who maybe over the final 5 games of their season has 3 with 18 or more. Those are the kind of games that you're looking for out of Will Fuller.
I don't think it's ever been a question about the talent. It's always been about the health. And if people who were burned by him last year, it was one injury. It was a hamstring injury that just kept coming back. So the problem was he would start games and not finish them, or he would start games and disappear. So I think that carries over into people being reluctant to start him. But now we've seen him play and play consistently. And, you know, you'll have to say as long as he stays healthy, but there's no reason right now to think that he wouldn't. He's at as much risk as anybody else stepping on a football field.
DJ Moore, Stefania, had 4 catches for 61 yards yesterday on 9 targets. He's got 10-plus fantasy points in 3 straight games, but he got banged up late in this game.
Yeah, he did. He was attempting to make a catch in the end zone, landed awkwardly, had to be helped off the field, and did not return. This was around the 2-minute warning time. So, as you mentioned, it was late in the game, and when it's late in the game, you never really get an update. Player just doesn't come back. Carolina going into a bye next week, so you can expect them to be fairly silent on this topic. It was his right ankle, and we'll see what happens.
There's no next man up here that I would suggest off of waivers, given that Robbie Anderson and Curtis Samuel both have been added aplenty on waivers already. Daniel?
Last week for a bye, is that correct?
This is the last week. Scheduled week of byes. It's just the Bucks and the Panthers. That's it. Week 14 and on. Every team is scheduled to have a game. Justin Jefferson, man, do I love you. 7 catches for 70 yards on 2 touchdowns on 13 targets. And the hope for Justin Jefferson was that with Adam Thielen out, he would have an opportunity to shine in a starring role, and he did exactly that. Goodness gracious, this guy is unbelievable, Stefania. But is not that this necessarily takes away from his opportunity to be great. Do we expect Adam Thielen to be back this week? This is a weird one this past week.
It was a weird one because usually what happens is we hear reports of players who get added to the reserve COVID-19 list, and no one has to specify whether they've tested positive or whether they've just been added as a close contact. In the case of Adam Thielen, we really didn't hear. You know, when we hear later a player tested positive, it's usually the player, the player's agent who's released that information, and then the team is okay to proceed with talking about it. But in this case, we have not heard.
Yeah, who knows? We don't exactly know. That being said, Adam Thielen, was very celebratory after the game. Did you see this at the end of the day? End of the game? It's incredibly awesome. His wife posted a video on Twitter that the Vikings reshared. The late touchdown pass from Kirk Cousins to Chad Beebe to win the game. Adam Thielen celebrated with the football in his hand, exactly like he was actually on the field himself. Cool. It was really cool. So a good moment there. Hope the best for
Adam
Thielen.
Good for Chad Beebe because he got to redeem himself.
But you know what? That's why I love sports. Yeah. That's why we love sports is Chad Beebe could have sunk his head in his lap and just said, I let the team down. I cost us the game. Instead, he bounced back. That is the resilience we like to see in any walk of life. You know, James Robinson, just got to appreciate you. 128 rushing yards and a touchdown, 5 catches, 31 yards, 26.9 fantasy points. He's got 99-plus rushing yards in 3 of his past 4 games. He's got 25-plus touches in 4 of his past 5 games. We talk about workhorses in fantasy, and I've seen a lot of people, including Adam Levitan, tweeting about this morning, and I'm sure Kyle can add some context to this later on in the season. There is no workhorse who is more of a workhorse than James Robinson. He dominates touches this season for the Jaguars like no other running back is dominating touches. It is his job. It is only his job. It will not be anybody else's job unless James Robinson decides it is going to be somebody else's job. This guy has been just remarkable, Stefania. The circumstances working against him. Not only was he an undrafted player, but an undrafted player with no chance to earn his stripes other than like a 2-week period where they barely put the pads on. Like, and this, by the way, is, and I get it, this is a team that they need a lot of help, right? But still, like an undrafted rookie to be this remarkable, to be this much of a workhorse for a team that, you know, they are not good on offense, and yet he continues to find ways. Like he's finding ways by himself. He's amazing.
He really is. And, you know, good for him. There's not really much to add to all the accolades. He is what he is. He is consistency personified week in and week out, which is something you are yearning for in fantasy. You can hardly ever find somebody where it's like, set it, forget it. You know they're going to touch the ball. You know they're going to produce. James Robinson is that guy.
And by the way, the schedule in the playoffs is really tough. Baltimore, Chicago, Indy to wrap things up. If you traded him, I understand the logic. I just hope he got a nice, nice package in exchange for James Robinson. We're going to rip through a bunch of stars from yesterday. But the Geico good news of the day is Tyreek Hill. 13 catches, 269 yards, 3 touchdowns, 57.9 fantasy points. The 10th best game in fantasy football history at any position in PPR scoring. I do not know how you are supposed to defend Tyreek Hill. My analysis is this. If you gave me the next 5 years to work on doing a single backflip, and I had as much time as I needed to work on this backflip over the next 5 years, I would not be able to execute it. Tyreek Hill, in the middle of an NFL game, a professional football game, he did a backflip into the end zone. That was remarkable, Stefania.
It was incredible. Who was it from the Colts who did like the
Nyheim Hines.
Nyheim Hines.
Yeah, which is very impressive.
It was no Nyheim Hines performance. I got to say, Tyreek Hill did not stick the landing. Ooh. Nyheim Hines added a twist. I mean, look, we can give Tyreek Hill all the accolades for going, jillions of yards and ruining my fantasy day against one Matthew Berry who beat me because of Tyreek Hill. But I'm not going to give him points for the backflip.
I'm going to give a guy executed. Points for backflip because I can't do a backflip with a trampoline. Well, he did one into the end zone. Antonio Gibson was awesome awesome Thursday for the Washington football team. Good for them, Tavano. They found themselves a really nice player. 115 rushing yards, 3 touchdowns, 36.6 fantasy points.
I say, there were a lot of people who cast him aside at the start of this fantasy season, like, no way. They were all in on Darius Geis, or then it was going to be Bryce Love, and no way Antonio Gibson was going to, you know, we talked about him being this multi-dimensional talent, and that he was there for a reason, that they were grooming him to use him. And he has proven himself not only as a rusher, like just look at those stats, 115 rushing yards and 3 touchdowns, but he also had 5 catches. He can run. He can catch. Alex Smith is looking for him. I love it.
Derrick Henry was incredible yesterday with 178 rushing yards, 3 touchdowns. He is a lock-it-in RB1, one of the best players in fantasy again this season. Good on you, Jarvis Landry, who, talk about a soft spot against the Jaguars, whose defense is just pitiful. He balled out yesterday for the Cleveland Browns.
We talked about that last week.
Yeah.
You asked it. We were having that conversation. We worried, and we said, no, Jarvis Landry, because he is going to be consistency for them.
This is the week for him. Now, I don't know that it stays that way going forward. Their schedule, I don't know how this will all work out for him going forward. It was the best matchup of the season. What do you got?
This feels like the exception, not the rule. Like, the Browns want to be a running team.
That's right. So. It will be an exception, not a rule, I believe. For Jarvis Landry, he is, like, I still think a deeper league flex play and not much more than that. For right now, I love Jarvis Landry. The way that passing offense has been working, that is part of the reason why I'm a little bit more skittish on his value than a 28.3 point game would suggest. One more here. James White. Stefania had two rushing touchdowns yesterday, but just 18 rushing yards, 14.7 fantasy points. You know, it's still the Damian Harris show. If you look at basically the snaps and the utilization, James White's a really, really good player, but more often than not, if I'm going to expect a Patriots player to have a rushing touchdown from 2 yards or in, it's going to be A, Cam Newton, and B, Damian Harris. So nice play, and we all love James White, like one of the most reliable players in the NFL, but still don't know that I've seen enough in the passing game without Rex Burkhead for me to believe that, like, he creeps onto the flex radar. End disagreement there?
No, I'm okay with you. I was just thinking about how much, speaking of loving James White, like, one of the first things he talked about was something where he missed an assignment. I'm like, that you don't even have to make that apology because you are so good.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, you know, he is the guy who's reliable. There's a reason that he's trusted.
He reminds me, him, Terry McLaurin, kind of two guys cut from the same cloth there, right? That, like,
the work
even
ethic.
Though they're really good, they do all the right things too, which makes them even better than just their talent alone would make them. Let's have a couple of minutes here to finish up the show on Monday Night Football, and because there was some news here, Stefania, but let's begin with some injuries. Zach Ertz, do we think he'll play tonight?
I do not.
Okay.
And I think that Zach Ertz, you know, I think that they were hopeful. Remember, so he was designated for return. You get the 21-day window. He's now creeping into that third week. And so Doug Peterson, I believe he said he was hopeful. Do they play Green Bay next? Is that
who yes, they do. They play Green Bay.
I think Doug Peterson, he said he was hopeful to have him for Green Bay, but they just don't feel like he's ready to go yet.
We'll keep an eye on that one. But what will be interesting for Philadelphia is whether or not Carson Wentz plays the entire game tonight, as Jalen Hurts will reportedly see more action tonight. That coming from Tim McManus, who covers the Eagles for us. Actually, let me be clear. Tim reported that Jalen Hurts got more reps with the ones this week. My inference from that is that he would play more tonight as a result of the fact that he's practicing more with the ones.
Would that be the other way around ever? Like, would you ever have a backup quarterback who's not going to get snaps practice with the first team?
Yeah,
like
certainly it would be unusual for them to put efforts into getting him more prepared and then not him not playing as much. But we shall see.
Do a psych job on your quarterback, maybe, to say, like, this is what's coming if you don't perform well.
But a couple of last thoughts here is that, like, I don't think that many people were still relying upon Carson Wentz as their starter. If you are, though, it's hard to, like, you probably had to pivot yesterday, right? Like, not like Russell Wilson's going to be available for you in your league. But if Carson Wentz, if you are relying upon him for some reason and you can keep plowing through to week 13, then you got to study this game really closely tonight. Because if he has either an egg or if Jalen Hurts plays a ton, even if it's, you know, when I say a ton, like 30% of the snaps, then Carson Wentz probably loses whatever starting viability he had. Last shot here for you, Travis Fogelman. I don't mean that as, like, a personal affront. I'm just saying that, like, from a fantasy perspective, if he doesn't get it done tonight, three straight games of back-to-back-to-back, not good. Like, I think he could probably be a player that if you needed the roster spot, you could move on from. I love Travis Fogelman. He's been an incredible story this year. At one point, he was on this absurd stretch. It just hasn't been great these past couple of weeks, and we're at the point now where, I was going to say, I think a lot of it may not be attributable to Travis Fulgham himself. And then, good news, Stefania, we get Chris Carson back.
We get Chris Carson back, and he's had a full week of practice. Pete Carroll's been singing his praises for how he's looked all week. I love the fact that they waited that extra week to give him till Monday night, but yes, Chris Carson, put him in your lineup.
Look to see how he does tonight. He should be the workhorse back for the Seattle Seahawks, who seem to find a way to play well on the road, traveling west to east. Doesn't matter what time of the day it is, but a huge game for the Seahawks as the door.
I think they're going to win. If I was picking the game, I would pick them to win. But the Niners showing that there's still hope.
That's right.
For any team in the NFC West, and it would really help the Niners out if the Eagles would step it up.
Yeah, so I got it. So you're picking the Seahawks. You just don't want the Seahawks to win, which, by the way, is a very reasonable take to have for somebody who loves the 49ers. We are back tomorrow to talk about waiver wires, talk about Monday Night Football, and potentially preview Tuesday Night Football if the game is still on.
And maybe we'll know where the 49ers are going to be practicing and playing.
That would be good.
3-4 weeks.
That would be good as well for Daniel and Stefania. I'm Field. We're back on Tuesday. We'll talk to you then. Peace out.
Tennessee, you're in the 06010.